From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1811 in what became known as Rochester, New York. Founder Nathaniel Rochester was laying out a village, and he envisioned a business district at a place he called Four Corners. Well, today, Four Corners, the intersection of State and Main, you'll find a plaque in the northwest corner commemorating a spot where, in 1812, Hamlet Scranton cleared enough room for a log cabin. His family became the Village of Rochester's first permanent residence. Now, the Scrantons took in a boarder named Jehiel Barnard. He was Rochester's first tailor. And just down the road there, Jehiel built a two-story building that would become Rochester's first tailor shop. But he was busy with some other things, cutting cloth, but also baking, setting up space for a shoe business. So Jehiel hired two women to sew the garments. They happened to be Hamlet Scranton's wife and daughter. And just like that, Rochester's clothing industry was born. And when the Erie Canal turned Rochester into a boomtown, 48 tailors would expand the growing garment industry. It might be easy to forget today, but the garment industry was, for many years, a huge part of Rochester's success and identity. Tonight, WXXI launches a documentary that tells the story. It's called Tailor Made. You can see it tonight on WXXI TV at 8 p.m. But first, a conversation about the clothing industry, its history, its rise in Rochester. Let me welcome my guests. You will see plenty of Christine Radarsky, Rochester City historian, in the film, which I have already seen. And you do a great job taking us through the history. I hope you'll do that this hour. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
John Diakonos is here, the Vice President of Manufacturing for Hickey Freeman. And John, nice to see you.
Thank you, Evan.
And Arnie Roberti is on the phone with us. He's the President of Operations for Adrian Jewels. Arnie, thanks for taking the time for us.
Glad to be here, Evan.
Christine, it goes back to farther than I would have guessed. I mean, really, back 1811, that was a remarkable story to me. And part of your job, I know, is sort of soaking up the history and preserving it for us. I know the documentary does that tonight, but do you sense that sometimes we've lost a little bit of the, just how big and important the garment industry was here?
Oh, yeah. I find it amazing that people don't realize just how large of an industry this was here. You know, at one point, it was the second most important business opportunity here in our city. So, that's so overlooked these days.
And immigration, hugely tied to that. Tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. You know, Rochester was built largely on immigrants, and some of our earliest immigrants were indeed Germans who brought the skills of tailoring with them from the old country. So we had a ready-made supply of workers here in our community.
They took to tailoring in this community. Well, we're going to talk this hour about tailoring and garment industry during the war. The sporting industry champion, all these things that I don't think I knew until I saw the documentary that airs tonight at 8 o'clock. And, John, I'm curious to know if you agree. Do you think this community undervalues its history when it comes to the garment industry?
I really think so. When you look at the garment industry, especially when you look in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, I mean, it was one of the highest employers in the region. When you looked at the five clothing houses and you had in excess of 9, 10,000 employees working for those five major clothing houses, it was actually preferred to work for the clothing houses than it was at the time working for GM or Kodak or Xerox. Well, Xerox wasn't even really a company at that point. And it was just, it was a company that actually started about a block away from Hickey Freeman. And, it's just that heritage is a key point, I think, identity of being Rochesterians.
Well, and the story of Adrian Jewels as well, opened in, Arnie, 1963 by someone who shares your last name.
Yes. My dad started the business in 1963, Adriano Roberti.
And tell us a little bit about the story of how that came to pass and how that kind of fits into the Rochester garment industry.
Well, like most immigrants, my dad started his career at a very young age. He was learning how to sew by the age of six, and he worked under the tutelage of his grandfather, Papa Angelo. He learned how to sew, cut, and he was assembling his first pair of trousers at the age of 11 and a half. He would go to school during the day, and in the afternoons he would work at Papa Angelo's and learn how to be a tailor. He attended the Ruggieri School of Design, a very prominent design school in Italy. At the age of 17, he started his own tailor shop, where he hired a few employees and made clothing for local business people and prominent celebrities. At age 22, he emigrated to the United States, worked for a famous clothing company that is still in existence today, right, John?
That's correct, Arnie.
So he worked for Hickey Freeman's at the age of 22. After a few years at Hickey's, his entrepreneur spirit came budding out again, and he started Adrian Jewels Limited.
And I want to also address how I don't know how to describe it, how interesting it is that Adrian Jewels, that Hickey is here, is still here in a business where, and granted, I understand what Adrian Jewels and what Hickey Freeman are making are not the same as what I'm wearing on a day-to-day basis or everyone's wearing on a day-to-day basis, but a lot of companies have gone for the cheapest options. And we did see, Christine Radarsky, we did see Rochester go through its own phase, and the documentary covers this, of working conditions, et cetera, when it came to the garment industry. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. The garment industry was a terrible place to work. In its earliest days, women were working from home largely, or in sweatshops, boarding houses, where they were subject to poor lighting conditions, poor air conditions. And they were largely invisible in their service in this field. Later, as the factories started to be built and you had the access to sewing machine technology, then women were crowded into these very crowded working conditions. Again, long hours, terrible air conditions, unsafe buildings. And we know there have been several tragedies in the garment industry, including the 1913 Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in New York City, where there was not adequate access to exits from buildings. In fact, in some cases, the business owners would actually lock the women, and in some cases, men, into the buildings to do their work.
So let's listen to a clip from the show tonight from the documentary TaylorMade that airs tonight at 8 p.m. on WXXI-TV. This is about some of those conditions that Christine just described.
In 1911, the city began to inspect working conditions facing women. Health officer Dr. George Goller announced his findings.
In the model city of Rochester, where civic pride is eclipsed only by pursuit of the almighty dollar, girls sit in unsanitary and unventilated rooms for 10 hours a day stitching garments.
When the city released the findings of its investigation, the report noted that children were also victims of these harsh conditions. This was embarrassing for an industry that told the nation Rochester made means quality. A newspaper in Toledo, Ohio mocked that claim.
Rochester made means disease, dirt, poor air, poor light, and the exploitation of the flesh and blood of children.
That's harsh, Christine.
It is. It was really terrible.
But deserved.
Deserved, I believe so, yes. That, women suffered terrible conditions. You know, the lint from the fabric could cause more susceptibility to tuberculosis, among other things, too.
Yeah, and so at least in the film, we learn about that part of the history, but also how things progressed and moved forward. And thankfully, that didn't stay that way forever.
That's correct. So, and I think I misspoke earlier, after the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in 1911, there was this factory investigation committee throughout New York State, and they did identify several conditions throughout the state, and especially here in Rochester, that, ultimately there were some improvements. And here in Rochester, we saw some of the largest manufacturers building larger new factories that were meant to be safer with better ventilation. So you did start to see some improvements over time.
And workers maybe, John, you want to weigh in there? Go ahead.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm going to go back to the fact that with Hickey Freeman, the actual cornerstone was laid on the corner of Clinton Avenue and Avenue D in 1912. And taking that, what Christine was just saying, in regards to working conditions, there you had basically a factory that was built with very high 14-foot, 15-foot ceilings, very large windows in regards to not only just having a lot of natural light coming into the factory, but they were able to be opened, get proper ventilation throughout the factory. And I think that's where, back with Jeremiah Hickey and Jacob Freeman, they realized that times were changing, and they were able to save their money up, and that's how Hickey Freeman ended up being on that corner. It was actually a lot of open land, and then from there the expansion happened. And keeping those principles of working, the type of working conditions their employees were going to experience on a daily basis.
And one of the lessons, I think, of the clothing industry is unfortunately what happened here more than 100 years ago. We saw the businesses, the companies learn from that. I think workers advocate for themselves a little better over time, conditions changing and improving. But we're still living in a world where, I mean, it was just a few years ago that a factory collapsed in Bangladesh and 1,000 people were killed. And I don't know why we tolerate that other than the fact that we like cheap things, John. I mean, so, you know, John and Arnie are representing companies that are still here that treat their workers very differently than they do on some of these overseas references. And I know the clothing isn't cheap, but at the same time, do we overvalue cheap to the detriment of workers, I guess, John?
Well, if we go back to the 80s, the 90s, there was even a push of Buy American even back in the 80s where the automotive industry was getting onslaughted from the foreign competition from Japan. And back then was, you know, Buy American, you're protecting your jobs. And I think it finally took about 30 some odd years where I think finally our society is realizing that jobs are to be protected in the United States. You have to realize who's making those products for us. And with that said, you get into where, you know, is it worth a few extra dollars? I would say it would be. At our price point, I mean, our clientele is completely different from, I would say, the normal citizen that's in the United States. But still, when you think about who you're supporting, what families are actually being able to be, to have their lives being affected and be able to have a dream of sending their kids to school and to colleges, it's all interrelated. It's this grand matrix that, you know, supports manufacturing, just not in Rochester, but actually in the U.S.
Sure, and that's why I don't mean necessarily, well, everyone should go out and buy Hickey Freeman and Adrian Jules tomorrow. Not everyone can do that. But what I'm saying is we don't think very much, I think, generally, and I'm just as guilty as anybody, about where that money is going, what the conditions are like, because this documentary that airs tonight, it looks like ancient history, some of these working conditions, what women were going through, what Christine just described, but that's still the world we live in many places. Not here right now, thank goodness. Arnie, what do you think?
Well, as I understand it, things here in the United States with OSHA and the EPA, I mean, working conditions in Adrian Jules or at Hickey Freeman's are far superior to what you find throughout other parts of the world. We have climate-controlled environments. We have, in fact, Adrian Jules just installed new lighting throughout our building to make sure that our employees could see well and there wasn't a strain on their eyes. When you go to think about the mindset of Walmart, in the 80s, Walmart was made in the USA. Almost everything that you bought in Walmart was made in the USA. But with the pressure for economics and people needing to be concerned about what they're paying for the things that they buy, the clothing industry, which is very labor intensive, no matter if you're buying t-shirts, jeans, or well-made suits, it's very expensive labor, or there's a lot of labor that goes into it. And when people can save a few dollars buying a t-shirt that's made here in the United States or a t-shirt made offshore, you know, they're going to look at the what the value is to them and how they want to invest in that. And I think people, you know, have a choice to make to purchase things made in the United States or offshore. But I think that the few, like John said, the few extra dollars that they could spend buying the United States, I think is well worth it.
Well, let me grab a phone call because Rich in Rochester has got to comment on exactly that subject. And by the way, if you want to weigh in on this program today, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Rich in Rochester, go ahead.
Yeah, the question I have to bring up is this. I know that we talk about Buy American and stuff like that, but how about when the companies themselves betray us in this sense that the quality of their work, and you know, like you brought up the automobiles, but the reality of the automobile was that the quality of the work had gotten to the point where it wasn't as good as its competitors. So I feel the companies betrayed us in that sense, and everybody was talking about Buy American, but what were they willing to do to give us the quality product so that wouldn't be an issue? And another thing is, real quick, because this is happening regardless of what we talk about, how should we approach it as far as with our children, knowing that we're going to be in this global economy, knowing how jobs are going to move and all that? How do we approach it with our children? How do we teach our children to deal in that world, the reality of that world?
Rich, thanks for the phone call. I'll start with Arnie Roberti from Adrian Jules, President of Operations. Go ahead, Arnie.
Well, I agree that in the 80s we had a problem with American-made automobiles, but look what they've done. They've had a complete renaissance in that. The American-made quality car right now is as good as anything that's out there in the world. Our price points are competitive. And I think that goes with our clothing, too. If you compare the Adrian Jules quality clothing or the Hickey Freeman's quality clothing with other things that are coming out of Italy or somewhere in Europe, you're going to find that we're very competitive price-wise. Knowing that the garment is competitively priced, and if you look at the quality of the garment, the texture of the fabrics, the way that it fits, the construction and quality of the materials used, I think you'll find that we're very competitive.
Okay. John, what do you think?
Well, first of all, you're right, Arnie. I think back in the 80s, though, the automotive industry got a little complacent, and it was, if you want to call it, a little bit of shock therapy, and having the quality of the overseas automobiles really hitting the roads here in the United States. For our garments, we've had to stay competitive because I think, in our case, we've always been on a global stage. You know, so for us, it's not really anything new. We've always had to compete against the Zegnas and the Conianis and the Brionis, in regards to Italian manufacturers. And there's some good manufacturing garments coming out of China right now that, both of us are going to be in head-to-head competitions with. So that's where we got to go in to really evaluate our position in the industry, and then also too, where we need to make investments in regards to technologies. Of course, we are going to embrace them, and we're going to bring them in because it keeps us competitive, and it keeps jobs here in Rochester, and keeps people working for both of our companies.
Well, there certainly is something to be said for the sentiment, the Buy American sentiment, but I think Rich's point in the discussion you just heard indicates that if the quality isn't good, as it suffered for some years in the American automotive industry, it's going to be harder to get people to buy it just on a patriotic sentiment. But let's listen to a clip from WXXI-TV's TaylorMade documentary that airs tonight at 8 o'clock. This is Congresswoman Louise Slaughter talking about the fact that in Congress, it's not hard to find people we're wearing Hickey Freeman.
My male colleagues coming down the hall would go like this. Show me their Hickey Freeman label. I was always considered, in my mind, to be Hickey Freeman's Washington office. Hickey Freeman never made women's clothes. I was the only member of Congress, the only woman ever represented this area, who wasn't able to wear a Hickey Freeman suit.
John, what do you think?
Oh, boy, she did it to us again. No, Louise has been a good ally for, I would say, the clothing industry in the United States. She is from West Virginia. She's actually, I think she even worked in a clothing factory at one time. So she has a very, I would say, a real special spot in her heart. And as for making women's clothes, we dabble. Are we good at it? Not bad, but we also don't have the correct shapes and forms, especially when you're pressing garments off. It's a total different make that we've been used to.
But you've heard that story, haven't you? People walking down the hall and showing the label.
Oh, with Louise. Oh yeah, she every time I see her says, John. John. I said, they're showing me labels, and I said, thank God. I go, thank God, Louise.
Well, and let's listen to Senator Chuck Schumer also talking about Rochester's place in the garment industry and Hickey Freeman.
Rochester has had an excellent reputation as making really fine clothes. And like the rest of the garment industry in New York City, in the South, and everywhere else, it's had rough times. But it could have a better future because the high-end clothes still are made best in America, and that's why Hickey Freeman is beginning to prosper again.
Fair, John?
Very fair.
Okay, and let me ask Arnie then, because I've got some listeners responding to Congresswoman Slaughter's comments. Who is going to make women's clothing? Arnie, you want to weigh in from Adrian Jules' perspective?
Wow, that's a tough one. you know, we, like John said, we are primarily a man's custom clothier. We do dabble in women's. We do a pretty decent job with that. But primarily, we are a men's clothier. Women just have a lot more curves than guys do. And it's just a lot more difficult to fit and to satisfy. So we primarily focus on men's clothing.
And we talked about the fact that in Congress, people will flash the Hickey Freeman label. Do I have it right? Does Jim Boeheim wear Adrian Jules?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, when did he start? I'm curious.
Oh, that's got to be back in the early 90s.
Yeah, because that's when he started to look not as goofy. In fact, he started looking really good, because now he's got really good threads. But, boy, you look like in the 60s, 70s, you know, when he took the job as a young man. He was, you know, I don't know if you could endorse the old pictures there, Arnie, of Coach Boeheim on the sideline.
Well, let's just say that we think that he stepped up and improved his game there.
We all have our fashion phase. If we were to look back, we wouldn't be all that proud of. But Christine Radarski is Rochester City historian. The men's fashion industry, obviously, is a prominent place still in Rochester. What would you say to the women who are saying, where's the women's clothing?
You know, that's true. Rochester has always focused on the men's clothing industry. I'm not aware of any large manufacturer here in Rochester that made women's clothing. But we did have a large shoe manufacturer in Rochester as well, and the focus there was on women's shoes and children's shoes. So, you know, there was some work going on for women here in Rochester, but not much on in the clothing side.
All right, well, let's turn to an email then. And Ann sends us an email and says, one of your guests mentioned 10,000 people working in the garment industry. Where is it now? And why has it changed, if it has? Christine, I'll start with you here. It's not quite what it used to be.
Yeah, I don't know what the numbers are. John could tell us that better. But you know, over time, we saw the industry declining, and I think largely attributable to the fact that consumers were looking for those cheaper goods. If you look at the history of our garment industry, both in Rochester and nationwide, I think the move has always been toward more affordable clothing. What Rochester did best was, you know, higher-end clothing. Rochester meant quality. And the market for that, I believe, has declined as people sought cheaper and cheaper goods.
Okay. Arnie, I'll let you weigh in that as well. Go ahead.
Well, you know, back in the turn of the century, you know, Rochester was one of six cities that were the clothing manufacturers for the whole of the United States. That was New York City, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Chicago, Cincinnati, and Rochester was in there. We were proud of the fact that, you know, Rochester was such a prominent player in the clothing manufacturing. In the 70s, things started to go offshore, and people were concerned more with price than they were about quality. Some of the largest manufacturers in the country closed up their doors in the late 60s and 70s. I would say that we're probably at 10% of what we were at the high mark in the 40s and 50s when we were, you know, had 10,000 employees.
And for Adrian Jules, has the level of employment changed?
We've been steady for the last 7 or 8 years. We would like to grow. It's difficult finding employees is the thing that's holding us back from growing. There are not as many seamstresses and tailors in Rochester. There's not as many immigrants that are coming in and taking up the tailoring trade. And certainly American-born citizens, there's not many taking up the tailoring trade. So we're limited on our growth based primarily on the number of employees we can hire.
Okay. John Diakatos from Hickey Freeman.
You know, you're right about not having tailors and seamstresses available in the Rochester area, but that's where, especially if you get into a growth phase, you start have to thinking a little bit out of a self-sustaining situation where you have to develop training centers, teach people, you know, what does it mean to be, you know, how to operate a sewing machine, how to sew a straight seam, how to use a swing gauge in regards to sewing panels together, is one of the foundations of keeping your business, you know, in a sustainable, if you're growing state. You know, with Hickey Freeman, we've been basically we've gone through two bankruptcies that one was the publicly held HMX Corporation. The second was a bankruptcy that was done with a limited partnership. And right now we have an ownership that is really in tune with manufacturing of apparel, especially men's tailored clothing here in Rochester. And kind of like, you know, if you want to call it rebooting the brand, you know, you always got to reinvent yourselves. But the basis of that, once you reboot yourself, you got to be able to deliver. And to deliver that product, you have to have a strong manufacturing base. So between training centers, bringing people in, we've worked closely for years with the Catholic Family Agent, Family Services. So when there are waves of immigrants coming into the Rochester area, we make sure that it's known that we, you know, we do have jobs available, and you know, please send, you know, individuals our way. We've also have worked with refugees helping refugees. That's basically another little bit of a, if you want to call it, hands-on training program that is being worked on. That really are refugees that have already learned sewing skills, but they're passing that on, and then from there, they'll you know, when jobs are available, they come to the factory, apply for the job, and then I would say the majority of the time they're hired, you know, especially when we do have openings.
But John, forgive my ignorance, you know, I'm just curious, if you are you surprised at all that there is such a small amount of American-born interest in this industry?
No, I'm not surprised, because when it really comes to it, I mean, what is the if you want to call it the spark or the attraction to this type of industry? We it is very labor intensive, and until it's not like technologies where you're building circuit boards and what is it going into, and you know, what is it, does it belong to that camera, or does it, or you're building sub-assemblies that are going to go into possibly automotive products. It doesn't have that panache. Yes, thank you, Artie. But you know, so it's a certain type of individual that is going to want to be able to come in, and you know, we'll make sure that they have, there's a term, job enrichment, but you know, make sure that they know multiple operations, so they're not doing the same thing day in and day out, and it becomes mundane and boring. You know, you try to keep their days active, and that's I know is true, you know, for Arnie and his company, and with Hickey.
Yeah, Arnie, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's a long apprenticeship. You know, and John, you know, he mentions about people learning and keeping it interesting for them. I think that when people hear that we're making clothing for a famous actor or entrepreneur or business person or politician, they like that. They like to hear that. But to have that panache, it's an industry that requires a lot of training. It requires a lot of skill level. Believe it or not, it's not everyone has the touch or skill in their fingers or their hands to be able to sew and do a good job that would be up to the caliber that we need here at Adrian Jewels. So it's a long apprenticeship, and it takes some time. The American born seamstress, there's a lot of them down south when they were building clothing for Levi's or Carhartt's or something that was a little bit on the rougher scale, but I don't think there's as many American born that are building really high quality men's clothing.
It's like a certain level of impatience that you know, new hires would have. They figure after 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they should be able to perform the job and go right out, you know, and take off with it, and they don't realize that their differences in fabrics and how they react under the foot and under the needle, and how you have to be able to control the panels together to be able to sew your seams correctly and be able to divide the easement or fullness into a seam to give it its shape. I mean, that takes months. Absolutely right, Artie.
Well, let's get a short break in and come back to your phone calls. We have a couple people waiting to join the conversation. We also have an email from Nadia, who wants to know if Rochester's garment industry had a role during the war, which we can talk about as well, with Christine Radarski, the Rochester City historian, John Diaconos, Vice President of Manufacturing for Hickey Freeman, and Arnie Roberti from Adrian Jewels, their President of Operations. Tonight, 8 p.m., TaylorMade, a documentary about the history of Rochester's clothing and fashion industry, the garment industry here. 8 o'clock tonight on WXXI TV. It rolls out. You'll hear the great voice and the narration from our colleague from down the hall at Classical 91.5, Brenda Tremblay, leading the way there. So short break, and more of your questions answered on this next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections, $50 million more for medical research could mean more jobs in Rochester and much better research. Is it going to happen? We'll take a look. And then second hour, a photojournalist joins us. He found hundreds of slides from a trip he took in 1970 when he was 26 years old. It's a look at a different America, the difference between 1970 and today. We'll talk about it.
As a 10-year-old boy in Queens, Victor Lavelle idolized early 20th century horror writer H.P. Lovecraft. But as he grew older, he found the writer's racist attitudes disturbing.
What did he just say? And it was the kind of thing that if you were walking down the street and somebody said that, you'd smack him in the mouth.
Lavelle's new novella, The Ballad of Black Tom, is a response to Lovecraft. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This evening at 7 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Paul and Irondequoit next up. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I'm sitting outside of Rubino's on Ridge Road East, right down the street here from Adrian Jules. And I grew up in the neighborhood where around the Avenue D, Clinton Avenue area, right by Hickey Freeman's, and, you know, provided just a wealth of jobs over the years. The parking lots were always full during the 60s and 70s. And if you left there, you went down to St. Paul Street, you headed downtown, you went by Hickox and then by Bonds, and then as you entered downtown, there was Superba Cravats and then Stein's. And it was a spectacular industry. I had the pleasure of having a suit made at Bonds, which was always an experience. You know, they make the pockets all the way upstairs. They drop down a shoe, and they put them on the suit with you standing there and everything. And I'd like to encourage anybody that's listening to stop into some of these shops. And you can get some high-quality clothing, custom fit to you, at a reasonable rate. Particularly when you can buy stuff that's already been made, maybe a customer didn't pick it up or something like that. And I've been doing well in that and have some good-looking clothes because of that.
Paul, thanks for the phone call. Who would order a suit and not pick it up? I mean, Arnie, does that happen at Adrian Jules? Can you call me when that happens?
Yeah, we'll keep you on there. We'll send you an email there, Paul, Evan.
Does that happen, John?
Very rarely.
I was going to say, I can't imagine a Hickey Freeman customer doing that. But a great story from Paul, and just dipping a little bit more into the history. Nadia writes to the program and just wants to know if the war had an impact on Rochester's garment industry. Christine Radarski?
The Civil War in particular had a huge impact on the industry. Prior to that, you had started to see some standardization of clothing. Early in the 19th century, there was actually some pattern work established here in Rochester so that you could have a standardization. But with the advent of the Civil War, you needed to clothe soldiers and get the clothing to the front very quickly. So that became very, very important in Rochester, and so you saw the industry being pieced out so that there would be cutters cutting according to the patterns, and then the seamstresses and tailors putting those things together in factories and getting them to the war. If you look at other wars as well, up after the First World War and the Second World War, that allowed different types of labor forces to come in. So our earliest immigrants were Jews, Poles, Germans. But after the First World War and the Second World War, you had a lot of Italians becoming available, too. And I know Bond Clothing, for example, was actively recruiting from Italy. I have some interesting notebooks in my office where they had photographs of people who were applying for work and information on who was recommending them. And then the comments from the employers on what they thought of each individual person. Some comments as simple as good, others that would say terrible, do not hire. So they were really vetting their employees.
Well, my wife's great-grandfather was an Italian tailor in Rochester. And I'm just wondering, John, you know, we talked about the fact that immigration has really driven this industry, but generally from where?
Well, going back to the Germans and the Jews prior to World War II, and then after World War II, you had a lot of people that were basically homeless. in Europe. But yes, the emigration of Italian tailors to the United States. Bonds was one of the supporters, but even Hickey Freeman, and being able to bring in tailors from Italy. And that went through the 50s and a good part of the 60s in regards to emigration of tailors. Then it moved on to actually immigration of master tailors from Turkey. Hickey Freeman had a long-standing policy and also a request with the Department of Immigration that because we couldn't find master tailors in the United States, we were able to sponsor immigration from those countries to Hickey Freeman. And that really went right up until about 2005, 2006, where the immigration of Turkish tailors, Chinese tailors from mainland China, and then we also did some recruitment even down in the New York City area, down around the Garment District. It was near Little Italy and Chinatown. So it's always been a source of bringing in new talent, bringing in the skills that you can build off of, and give them a good exposure and training in mass production, because that's basically what we're doing. We're producing high quality, very luxurious garments, but we're doing it in a very large numbers.
Arnie, what about you and your company's tailors?
Well, it's definitely difficult to find tailors, and we've done a good job of looking throughout the United States to bring people to Rochester so that we could hire them. We did have my immigrants that we knew. My father knew, being an Italian immigrant, knew a lot of Italians that came to work for us that were already located in Rochester. There's pockets of tailors all around the country. New York is a great source for them. Tennessee actually has some tailors, Chicago. And we, kind of put our feelers out when we go to hire some tailors. And, without tailors, they are the mainstay of what makes our garment and our company great. So we definitely are indebted to all of our fine employees.
Here's Elliot writing to us to say, "So glad you're doing a program on the clothing industry. My father was a cutter in Hickey Freeman for 35 years. He was one of the early Jewish immigrants from Russia and Eastern Europe, attracted to Rochester, and worked side by side with Italian immigrants for many years. He made close friendships there. My father was proud of some of the suits he cut for celebrities, including President Lyndon Johnson." John, apocryphal or true?
It's true.
Elliot, I would never question that. Thanks for the note there. And Marshall in Rochester wants to weigh on that as well. Go ahead, Marshall.
Hi. This is a great program you guys have.
Thanks.
Today. I just want to say that both of my grandparents were immigrants from Canada that came to work at Hickey Freeman in the mid-50s, and they worked there until the late 80s, and both of them retired from Hickey Freeman, then coincidentally moved back to Canada. But that's pretty much how our family got to Rochester, through Hickey Freeman. My grandfather was a tailor there, and my grandmother was a seamstress.
Very good. Well, thank you, Marshall. I guess it's a reminder, Christine Radarsky, just how many families locally, Marshall's story, Elliot, my goodness, my wife's great-grandfather, how many of us have connections to this industry that we may not, may not think about every day?
That's one of the things I found really interesting when I started research for this program, is that we hear so much about Kodak and Kodak kids and all the experiences they had. But once you start asking questions about the garment industry, it seems like everyone in Rochester has some sort of connection. And yet we don't seem to talk about it as much as we do with some of these other industries.
Well, see the story tonight, 8 p.m. tonight on WXXI-TV. It's tailor-made. It's about the history of the garment industry in Rochester. And you'll get this that we're talking about today and so much more with our guests, Christine Radarsky, the Rochester City historian, John Diakatos from Hickey Freeman, Arnie Roberti from Adrian Jules. And let me get back to the phones. And Anne in Penfield next up. Go ahead, Anne.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad you're doing this show, and I'm anxious to see the program tonight. Just a quick comment, and then the questions that I'm really interested in. My dad had worked at Rochester Button for a number of years, and so buttons always seem very fascinating to me, and I think it's great that we've got industries and businesses in Rochester that we can be proud of. The one concern I have is that I'm hoping that we can be proud of these industries, not only for the customers they take care of, but for the way they treat their employees. I had a very good friend who was a young woman from a Southeast Asian country who worked at Hickey Freeman It was probably about 15 or 16 years ago. And she was just a spectacular seamstress, just stunningly beautiful, precise work. But two things were so surprising to me. One was that at that time, and maybe this has changed, she talked about how swelteringly hot it was in the summertime. Those high ceilings with large open windows were great for light, but it also meant that the sun was just streaming in there and the high ceilings trapped the heat. And at the time, the company had said, was telling employees there was no way to air condition it because it would be so expensive with these high ceilings. I'm assuming that technology should have changed. We have Wegmans stores that have high ceilings, and they seem to be able to do that. The other condition that I think is far more of a concern, and I'm hoping this has changed too, at that time, a number of the employees were paid by piecework, that because the requirements for their work were so precise and the garments had to be in such perfect condition, the justification was that if the pocket isn't exactly perfect or if the lapel on the suit jacket isn't exactly perfect, you're not going to be paid for the time that you were doing that. And my friend mentioned how it would be so sad, and she talked about one day that just was it kind of seared my mind, I guess, that it was a Chinese fellow who had been an immigrant. They were all immigrants for the most part, and he was here with his family, and he'd been laboring over, I think, a pocket and lapel maybe on a suit jacket, and the supervisor came walking down the aisle and stopped and looked and ripped the thing apart and threw it in the scrap basket and said, do it over.
Well, and just to be fair, I want John Diakatos to be able to weigh in because he's from Hickey Freeman. He's here, and so Ann's, you know, raising these concerns. John,
sure.
Okay. Well, first of all, Ann, in regards to the technology in 2005, we were able to actually air condition the entire factory. It took a lot of investment. The investment came from from the corporation that owned Hickey Freeman at the time. Also, it came from the union that also represented the employees of Hickey Freeman, and also I think there was some help too from New York State. So we went through and actually really air conditioned the factory. Mm-hmm. As for piecework, it's an incentive based system. And the quality checking and the actual performance of the job, quality is built into what we call them the rate or the price of what they're going to get for producing their job, and whether it's a sew dart operation or a side body operation, and those are studied, and they're studied with the principles of industrial engineering, and from there. You're setting rates for an average person with average efficiency, with average skills, to be able to perform those jobs. So, not knowing I don't remember a case like this in regards to having someone being able not to perform. But in general, I would say the majority of our people are successful. They do work on an incentive-based system, and it's been a system that has, quite frankly, worked since the late 20s and 30s, and it has to be constantly monitored and adjusted. And if we decide that we want to be able to have more work being able to perform or more checks to be done with a certain operation, we also accommodate that by also increasing the amount of time it takes to do the job, and also how the person is going to get paid for doing that piece. So. It's always a system that has to be that's continually managed and updated, and it's been proven to be successful for a lot of employees at Hickey Freeman and also for the company.
And the employees that are successful, are they paid decently?
Yes, they are.
Okay. And most of the tailors that you bring in, do you find they stay, they stick, they're doing good work?
Well, it goes back to that entrepreneurial spirit, right, Arnie, in regards to coming into work, and then that bug hits you. I would say that the majority of our immigrants that come in, especially the ones that we've sponsored to come in from overseas, whether it be Italy, Turkey, China, they have a tendency that they'll put in 3, 4, 5 years. The families would stay, and then the fathers or the husbands would go off and open up their tailor shops and really, you know, build a business for themselves there. So it's a benefit to the community, but also, too, it's a benefit to Hickey Freeman because you still have a stable workforce.
Okay. Ernie, does that ring true for you guys, too?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I mean, if you look around Rochester, there's a plethora of tailor shops that are around here, and a lot of those people that have their own shops did have the entrepreneurial spirit, and they worked for Hickey's or Adrian Jewels and then decided to branch out on their own. Regarding the piecework situation over there, in today's marketplace, in order to hire an employer and keep an employee, which is paramount for all of our businesses, you have to treat them fairly, and you have to pay them fairly. Checks and balances, you know, think about not the clothing industry. What about the automotive industry? If you didn't have checks and balances over there and make sure that the garment was done correctly, you could have cars with many defects in it. You know, companies like Hickey Freeman's and Adrian Jewels want to make sure that our garments are kept to a high standard. In order to do that, you have to have the garment checked throughout production. Do things need to be repaired, looked at, and taken care of throughout production? Absolutely, just as they would in any other manufacturing situation.
All right, let me grab Darlene in Rochester, who's been waiting. Go ahead, Darlene.
Yes, my grandmother was from Belfast, and she worked for Hickey Freeman, but she was a tailoress, and you had that job. She was set in the final collar, which that was what made the suit. But I knew a lot of the people who owned these factories here in Rochester, and they were family organizations. Hickey Freeman. What happened was, is when the families aged out, the companies got sold, and fortunately Duffy Hickey did continue on the tradition through their organization, but Hickox and many of them changed, and a dear friend moved Superba down to Puerto Rico in the late 70s, early 80s. So Superba supplied the entire country, and just this factory here, and that's where we saw in the 70s and 80s the closing of many of these old Rochester institutions. And I'm happy to see that we have a few that are carrying on. But the skill set that my grandmother had and other tailoresses and seamstresses, this is an old country thing. And my mother and her sisters couldn't wait until they could get store-bought clothes. So these skills are rare indeed. So that is why you see you need people from Europe and other areas in the Orient. So thank you very much for your program. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Charlene, thanks. And we've been talking about the skills, John, but you want to just punctuate that? Just the skills it takes to do the job there?
The skills, you really have to have a good set of hand-eye coordination, finger dexterity. You've got to have a really high level of perception. You know, think about having someone being a cutter and they're colorblind. I mean, it's impossible for them to be able to match the fabrics, match the patterns that are on the fabrics, whether it be a stripe or a plaid type of repeat on that fabric. And so there is an inherent ability that each person has, and whether, you know, and it's kind of like an athlete, you know what I mean, to give you an idea. You know, if you're going to continually practice over and over again, you're going to be becoming better and better at what you're doing. But there are going to be some athletes that are going to be faster than others. And, you know, or operators or sure. Employees are going to be faster than others.
Well, and before I lose the hour here, speaking of athletes, and we have barely scratched the surface of what you'll find in the documentary tonight, TaylorMade at 8 p.m. on WXXI TV, Christine Radarsky on athletics, champion clothing. You know, I mean, I think people might miss that there's a lot that's been happening in the garment industry in Rochester. There are a lot of surprises I found in the documentary. What surprised you most when you're doing your own research into this?
Well, you know, I hadn't known much about Champion myself at all. And so to learn that Champion had been founded here and learn a little bit about what made Champion so special in terms of they were the first ones to make a dedicated football jersey, and they made it so durable by simply changing the direction of the fabric. So things like that you don't even think about. if you're outside of the industry, and you know that was an innovation that was made right here in Rochester.
And I could hit a pitching wedge and hit the old button factory sitting right here. You know, you walk through the lobby there, and they've got pictures of what it used to. Otherwise, it's just offices, but great history there too, right?
You know, one thing that's really interesting, if you look around this community, so many of the old industrial buildings that are still standing had some connection to the garment industry or the button industry, the shoe industry. You know, so much has to do with clothing.
Somebody said, what was it, the Fabrics and Findings building is, there's a lot of infrastructure that you see, and I'm sort of glad they've kept some of the bones, by the way. I always like to see the repurposing. So John and Arnie, some final thoughts from you guys here. John, I know you haven't seen the documentary yet tonight. What are you going to be looking for tonight?
I'm just really going to take it right from the beginning, going to pop a bowl of popcorn, sit back, and just watch it right from the beginning, and I think it's going to be from what I've heard from the employees here at WXXI, it's going to be a really, really good program, and really something that, you know, I guess it's part of my DNA now, and just really would just go on and sit down and just enjoy the whole program.
And Arnie, you've about 20 seconds here. You feel like the garment industry will, it's not as large as it used to be by any means, but will it persist here in this town?
Oh, absolutely. I think that you've got two very strong companies here with Hickey Freeman's and Adrian Jewels. We've got a demand for our garment, and if you have a demand, you're going to find a way to produce it and continue to be successful and grow. So, yes, the garment industry is alive and well, and we're looking forward to the next 100 years.
Arnie Roberti from Adrian Jewels, President of Operation. Thank you, Arnie. Great conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Evan. Take care.
John Diaconos, the Vice President of Manufacturing for Hickey Freeman. John.
Thank you, Evan.
You're looking good today, sir. As always, thank you. Christine Radarski, Rochester City historian. Christine's got the coolest job in town. I hope you enjoy it. We always enjoy learning from you. Thank you for being here.
I do. Thanks for having me,
Evan. You'll see plenty of Christine in the documentary tonight, TaylorMade, 8 p.m. on WXXI-TV. Enjoy it. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk with you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.